Okay. Anything else on that chapter? I'm going to skip all his stuff on the stars, because I think she sums it up.
Is there any credence to the way his stars... Well, I guess it doesn't really move, does it?
Well, the only thing I could see that I thought had some relevance was the bottom of the first star. It says, shadow projected totally on my father, negative feeling repressed into Judaism. The bottom of the second star says, dark anima. Now, I felt that was probably genuine, that he had stopped projecting his rigidity and was able to at least begin questioning the meaning of his feelings for Bhagavan, even though he didn't follow it through, and was beginning to at least ask some questions about the deeper nature of physics. So that's about the only place I felt there was any real growth. Maybe, let me see, where did we... Yeah, I don't think it's worth our time. Unless you have a question, I'll address it otherwise. What I want to do now is go back to that last chapter, the appendix, page 244. And... this is a little essay Pali wrote talking about two of his dreams of physics. And, you know, we've been watching him flip back and forth between saying physics and psychology should have a complementary, equal relationship. He's saying that physics will subsume psychology. And I took that on two levels. One, that really physics is not going to subsume psychology. We don't know what it will look at, or what it will look like in the future, but that each discipline now has a piece of the truth. How that later evolves, we don't know. That it is physics recognizes the laws of matter. And got Jung reflecting on how big is the psyche. And conversely, Jung challenged physics to ask what is matter that it can behave synchronistically at certain moments. And that those are two valid questions, and one will not, at least in our time, subsume the other. And they have to be lived with until some future time when they can be solved. And, you know, if you know the history of science, it's not absurd to think in 300 years it will be solved, because we didn't know about the quantum 100 years ago. And 340 years ago, we thought the Earth was at the center of the solar system. So these major paradigm shifts do occur. Now, for Pauli, I think, we talked about this, the advantage of saying physics will subsume psychology. He doesn't have to worry about the psychological meaning of his physical dreams. And physics for him was a sort of stability point. He didn't want to let that be shaken. But it's interesting, Jung did not back down here. He sacrificed the friendship over this point. And well, that's just what he did. We can figure out why as we go along. But what's so interesting is to see what, yeah.
I won't do this, maybe if I'm getting off topic, just to say, I can't do that, but is there order to the synchronicity? Of course, to the events?
Well, Jung's idea is that, you know, we are born who we're going to be.
Yeah.
And that there is a tenuous thread which seeks to make that happen.
Yeah.
And it's an order, although it may not be a linearly experienced order. It's often experienced as a detour or a spiral that you don't get there directly. You're taken all over the place, but by God, sooner or later you get to where you're going.
Is what I mean is everybody heading in the same direction?
Well, you're headed toward the realization of your own selfhood.
Yeah.
And what synchronicity is about is helping that happen. So yes, there is an order to it. If you realize that order sometimes can look mighty disorderly.
That part I understand, but I'm still wondering about how everything's connected. And
join the club.
Yeah. if one person's destiny is totally contradictory to another person's destiny.
Yes, exactly.
And he didn't say anything about that.
Yes, I think he did. But, I think the question it arises then is, what is the purpose of world conflict? And who knows?
And world conflict is same kind of conflict that exists between...
But it could be that it is not, if everybody pursued their own destiny, if this could ever happen, that it would lead to more conflict. That's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
Okay.
Or it could be that conflict would be a necessary step in a higher...
To a different
level of unity.
Yeah.
Yeah, but certainly I think he would be aware... you take a marriage. Two people following themselves, it can be a hell of a mess.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe for a higher end. Or maybe just a mess.
Hmm.
But I think if I understood your initial question right, the key here is some sort of evolving order. Synchronicity serves that. The self serves that.
I was more wondering if we are trying, each of us trying to evolve toward the good.
No.
Something like that. No.
Big no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Towards what? We don't know.
Yeah.
And I think he was more concerned with helping individuals achieve this, recognizing that it creates as much conflict as it solves, but maybe the conflict that we need.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
I always remember that thing, because there's nothing so evil that rich can't come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing so good that evil doesn't emanate out of it. It always seems like,
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You've got to have the conflict evolve.
It's so important. We'll see coming up, not this appendix, but the next chapter, how Von Franz starts blowing him off. And what I love so much is she blows him off just at that time in the dreams where he's blowing himself off. So she doesn't, to me, that's differentiated eros. It allows for the conflict in the relationship, saying, if you're not going to take yourself seriously, neither am I, go to hell. And that is love. That's a form of love. We'll come back to that. But okay, let's go to the reason I'm going to this now is to kind of show you what would it look like if he could work on his dreams of physics psychologically, and what a rich harvest there was. And here at one point he does, but he probably forgets about it.
Is this before or after where we are in the story?
This is 1948. This is way before.
Way before.
Yeah, well way before.
What year are we in?
53.
53, okay.
I think, again, for the sake of time, let's just... Do I have a typo?
No. No.
Oh. Let's just go to the dreams. 2:45.
I didn't even realize we were going to do this part of the text today.
Didn't I say it?
No.
Should I skip it, or you want to read it, or?
No. Do it.
It's not that hard.
Skip it entirely?
No, I mean, come back to it after you've had a chance to read it, but...
I might be asking the question next time.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay.
There are just two dreams, and he in this essay, does exactly what he later recanted from. He takes two dreams of physical concepts in physics, and he interprets them. I don't agree with the way he interpreted them, but we can see that this physics also can be a source of psychological knowledge. So here's the first dream. My first physics teacher appears and says the change in the splitting of the ground state of the hydrogen atom is a fundamental one. Brass tones are engraved on a metal plate. Then I go to Göttingen. I didn't include that last sentence in the text. I somehow forgot it. So the last sentence after metal plate should say, then I go to Göttingen. G-O with two dots over it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go.
G-O dot dot.
G-O with a numeral out, two dots. T-T-I-N-G-E-N. I'm not even going to talk about what the author says because I think he doesn't get it. But first of all, the physics teacher was Arnold Sommerfeld, probably, who Pauli loved, and by all accounts was a fantastic human being. He was a wonderful teacher, a kindly, interested man. Now here I could use some help from Ted. The change in the splitting of the ground state. Hydrogen atom. Maybe I should drop this. Are there markers down there? No. Yeah, that's it.
You all see this? Hydrogen atom. It's a nucleus with one proton, one neutron, is that right? And one electron, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the deal is you have the same amount of electrons as you have neutrons, which makes the case bigger. Now, here's where I'm a little lost. Let's see what I think. The dream says the change in the splitting of the ground state. You can only have a splitting of the ground state if there are two electrons, right?
Normally there would be two electrons.
So he must be talking about a hydrogen ion. Hydrogen ion, right?
Two hydrogen, yeah, you mean.
No, it
can... Or yeah.
You can have this, can you not? Two electrons and a hydrogen ion. Right. That's a hydrogen ion.
Right.
So it's a negative charge. What the only impulse in me is why Pauli didn't say a hydrogen ion. That's what impulse me. Because we certainly know that. The text itself is contradictory. A change in the ground state implies two electrons. If there's two electrons in a hydrogen atom, it's an ion. He doesn't say ion.
Might be just talking about the one electron that.
How can you split the ground state?
Well, if you put it in some kind of environment, you know, that's there. So you do have two energies in the nucleus, and maybe the interaction can be different in one environment versus another environment.
A splitting of the ground state. That has to be two electrons.
Or what he's really saying is that there is two types of interaction between the electrons and that nucleus. And he's going beyond physics probably and trying to, it's going beyond that.
Can you have a hydrogen ion, sorry, a hydrogen atom where you have only one electron in the higher one? You can't have that, can you?
That can happen? Yeah.
Maybe that's what it means.
Yeah, there's two possible.
Yeah.
You can always think of all of those orbitals possibly occupied. It's just that one is more preferred than the other.
I see. So in this case, it would have received an energy charge.
Right.
The electron would have jumped up.
Right.
Then it would be unstable to jump back again.
Right.
Okay. Well, we don't really know, do we? I just think he would have said ion if he meant ion. Then he doesn't. He says atom.
So the ground state is the actual nucleus?
So it must be that the ground state would be the electron in this orbit.
Right.
And the splitting of the ground state would be the electron moving up to a higher orbit. That's the only way.
See, when he's trying to reflect back on, I'm not sure exactly how, but one of his big discoveries, one of his other big discoveries, is that in the presence of a magnetic field,
right,
that you get the electrons to be either with the field or against the field,
right,
and then you get two different energy levels.
Right.
So is he talking about here that there could be some kind of environment that operates on that electron in one way or the other, and then you get split. You see what I'm saying? That gets back to this Nobel Prize winning work.
I get you. That's it. So that if you put it in a pulsating magnetic field, that would be the case, right? That at one moment would be going, we would have one sort of interaction,
right,
and the next moment another interaction.
Right. Or maybe you're talking about some other kind of. In
dream,
is that a dream?
Yeah,
it's a dream. he might be taking them to another level of some kind of interaction.
Too bad he didn't get that, because that's what he keeps doing all the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point.
But that's the kind of insight that you want him to make.
Yeah!
Not just the magnetic field, but some other kind of interaction.
Well, it's hard for me to. I sort of had it all figured out, but you've got me confused, directly confused, because we don't know. But you get the point. How the words we were using to describe that electron fit him back and forth, two different influences. Is he being raised to a higher level or not a higher level? The only other detail, which we have to be really precise here, the text says. The change in the splitting of the ground state. It doesn't say the splitting in the ground state. It says the change in the splitting of the ground state. And I don't know what to make of that either. But
fundamental. the change is fundamental.
It's fundamental.
So it's not the essence.
What I got out of it, and please feel free to jump in because I'm not clear.
Another way of looking at it is, mm-hmm. is that the way that things go is that when two things interact, they interact positively and negatively, and then you get split. You get two different images of it. So that I guess what he's talking about, even at the ground state, there's that interaction, and you get two different states. That's kind of fundamental thing in physics and chemistry. The interaction can be either a positive one or that's the lower energy, or a negative interaction, which is a higher energy. So you get the switch.
But at a given moment of time, it has to be either or, right? It can't be both and.
Well, the thing is that they in reality, the atom will exist in that lower state, so that's
right.
The lower, it will progress in the lower state.
Right.
But if you give it some energy, it will pop up into the higher state.
Right. That I understand.
So it exists, it's a potential existence of the atom, although it's not there at the moment.
But would you call that the splitting of the ground state?
This is going back to spectroscopy now, that's where all this stuff comes from, is that when you try to hit it with a light, when you get these lines representing both states, because the energy that you put in allows it to go to that higher state then.
And would you call an electron going from a lower state to a higher state a splitting?
No,
you wouldn't, would you?
So, but I think he's using some language here that's kind of halfway in between physics and some other consciousness.
It doesn't. It's not a purely accurate description of a physicist.
Right.
Right.
Right. It's kind of halfway in between.
When it comes to that higher level, isn't that referred to as an agitated state?
Yeah, unstable.
It's an unstable, so it's an agitated state when it gets like that extra charge.
But it wants to come back down and liberate light.
Right.
That's what you see, is the light is liberated.
So that's not a fundamental, or that's not an essence in terms of the state. It's normal state is the low energy.
Right.
An unagitated,
right.
What's the word, stable state. Yeah, I was thinking of the word
equilibrium.
Yeah, more like an equilibrium, where
it
is when you hit it and it goes to the higher state, it can exist there, but
it can,
if that's an agitated state.
Well, let me just tell you what I might understand.
I was just thinking that splitting does kind of connotes those opposites.
Right. Here's what I think we can say safely now. How exactly to go from there, I'm not sure. But what I think is so important in the dream is that the starting point of the dream is a split. And the dream is addressing the change of the split as being fundamental. Not the split as fundamental, but the change of the split is fundamental. Now, however we want to visualize that in the electron, we probably won't know.
Well, you could talk about a narrower split or a wider split. It just one simple matter.
But
the wider split would be more intimate.
Yeah, but now think symbolically for a second. Put physics aside for a second. The dream is saying you're split, Allie, and changing that split is the fundamental thing. That's what I get out of the dream.
How about two? In the split, the resulting change is really what's fundamental to who you really are.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I don't know how we want to visualize the electrons in this, but you can see how at least the dream uses physical imagery psychologically. And it is not at all strange to interpret. We're not doing a very good job because we don't have all the details. But the fact that the terms like splitting and change occur in reference to the atom make it easily applicable to the personality. So this is the kind of thing I think Jung would not give up on. You cannot have these dreams and stick around me and not think they have symbolic meaning. And here I think we have a very crude beginning of that insight. Now, again, I'm a little confused about brass tones engraved on a metal plate. Brass is a mixture of tin and, is that right? Tin and copper. Zeus and Venus. These two opposites. So there it fits again. I think when you can see duplicated themes. Well, Zeus and Venus. Jupiter and Venus.
Maybe it's just me too, but like when I brass tones, I think of music when
That's
I say tones.
Yeah. So for him to put his feeling dealing with the union of opposites, metal, I'm just going to say the world. He doesn't give any specifics. And when you think of metal, I think of rust. So, now this is me playing with it. I don't know what he'd do with it. But again, I'm just trying to show you how you can work with these images symbolically. That physics is both science and psychology. So to say physics subsumes psychology means you don't have to do this anymore. You don't have to see the symbolic meaning of these images.
Did I? It's gone.
Oh, you want to try it or?
No.
So then you say
then you
go to Göttingen.
Göttingen was the center of the very beginnings of this quantum research, way before Copenhagen, and it was where they were beginning to work out the mathematical theory and calculation methods that were later used in the quantum research. So the very beginning, mathematical and conceptual research was going on there long before Bohr got going, but very consistent with that work. And Pauli studied in Göttingen. It was sort of like the Zurich of physics in its day. Now, I don't know what to make of that, but my first thought is it's not the place to go. It's rational. So there again, we see how he attempts to put a rational pattern on a irrational, non-rational process. Now, I'm not sure I'm right in this, but I just wanted to give you an idea of what these dreams look like and that it isn't so far-fetched to interpret them psychologically. Or you could say it's where he did his very first study, and he should go back to the basics and really learn. He's not quite as smart as he thinks he is in psychology, to go back and learn the basics of what he needs to do to pull this off. That is entirely possible. I'm jumping around a bit, but I think we can skip the author's comments. Go to 247. And Pauli does have a comment. If we interpret brass, see there at the bottom, as air perennius. Air perennius means more lasting than bronze. And it's from a phrase by Horace, who said, I have erected monuments more lasting than bronze. Meaning, I think, that the word outlasts any deed, the real word. So, you could say that the brass would be what, you know, the idea is that Pallas should have left to us, that would have lasted past his lifetime.
What's the translation of the Air Pyrenees?
Air Pyrenees is more lasting than bronze.
That's what those words actually,
mean. Yeah. And the Harar said, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, you know Latin? Exige monumentum air perennius. Exige is, I guess, I have erected monumentum monuments, air perennius, more lasting than bronze.
And this is from what author?
From Horace.
From Horace.
But the other dream is more convoluted, and I my inclination is to skip all the details and look at the main image. You see the
he elaborates on hydrogen here at the bottom of 247.
Okay, go ahead.
He says, I haven't read any of this.
So yeah.
He says the ego has the same meaning as hydrogen in the first dream.
Yeah, but I don't buy that.
You think that. Whose statement is this? Our author's?
Yes.
It seems like if it was anything, it would be the unconscious.
Yeah, exactly.
Symbolized.
Yes.
It was one and then it breaks.
Yeah. That's why I think he misses the point here. And no, I'm not sure I'm right. I'm just trying to give you an idea how taking physics and psychology as complementary looks practically, is to interpret these dreams psychologically. So, I mean, I think this is so important because science doesn't proceed apart from the unconscious. It is not a rational process. It's founded on the dreams just like any creative process is. And I think this could be the way for scientists to begin evaluating and bringing their feeling function to the work to look at the images that occur in their dreams as it responds to their scientific work and to interpret that psychologically for their own life. This is where the feeling function can enter in.
Good luck with that.
Well, it won't happen in our day, but I think it is possible. The complaint has always been that science is devoid of feeling, and I don't think it is when you see that there are images underneath it. And you can see that in some of Pally's dreams. So you can interpret their images just like anybody else's. And when you interpret an image, you create the possibility of bringing the feeling function in to evaluate. And I think that's the answer to the atom bomb, to bring the feeling function into science. And this is the way to do it. And that's why it was so important for Hippaly to have pursued this inquiry. If he could have written a book on the symbolic meaning of his physical dreams, we would really have something.
It's really interesting that, I mean, all the people connected to the physics behind the bomb, or a lot of them, had a devastating aspect after the bomb was dropped.
Yeah. Well, they were all his students. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not just saying bomb. I'm just saying a way to bring our ability to mitigate the power drive of science. This might be a way to do it.
Is it possible that something like the bomb and what happened can that be some way
shaped from it or shaped by it?
Shaped by it, I guess. Or from it.
You mean the event shapes the archetype, or the archetype shapes the event?
I don't know which one, but I'm just thinking that, I think that was the biggest event in this field.
Probably the biggest.
And so that, if we're talking about the archetype, it must have had some effect on it. I don't know why, how.
Well, as far as you're concerned, that's the dark side of God.
So it would have provided an image for that to manifest into that archetype.
Right.
The dark side.
Right.
Well, I think it's fascinating. I had emailed Gary about this. You all know Jim Zekanowicz, and I'll sit and watch him, as he's daydreaming. He'll draw structures, and I look down at them. It looks like constellations. And that's what chemical structures look like. They look like constellations. And so I said, interesting, some destiny is looking to be born through what you're doing, just as the stars.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when you talk about that archetypally, I think it would be fascinating to draw these structures and to begin to look for their counterparts, in the heavens or in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I agree.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
When you look at these chemical structures, they're just constellations.
Yeah, again, I would take that a bit further, that the unconscious, that science is based on images of the unconscious that have simply been extrapolated.
Right.
And if we want to talk about humanizing science, the way to do it is to get to the images that are generating it. And that's where we can understand and make change for those scientists who want to tackle this problem. So to me, it's opened up, a whole new field of inquiry, the psychology of science. Science can be interpreted, just like art can. You can't always interpret the product, because the product is a rationalized development of an image, but underneath each new idea is an image, or is an archetype. And it is really not rational. It starts with a non-rational image, which is then rationally extrapolated. And it's very, very rich possibility here.
And I think as you look at people drawing structures, something is being born from them. There's something that's coming in this particular form.
Yep.
I mean, Jim was intrigued enough to ask a couple questions.
Well, by God, there you go.
That was about
beginning.
Yeah. Well, he listens anyway. He doesn't tell me I'm completely stupid. He doesn't tell me I'm stupid at all. He's intrigued, but he doesn't
know. Well, it is like what we're talking about most of the science, you just use it.
Yeah.
Chemistry is the same.
Yeah.
You use it. You make all kinds of interesting molecules. But behind all of that is a lot of waving of the hand about how that works. Like, for example, like structural benzene, you can draw two different structures of it, and you need both structures of it. And either one represents the total picture of it.
Mm. I didn't know that. No.
Yeah, it is thought to be like a smeared out version between the two structures.
Uh-huh.
That's just one example. You have all kinds of indications, but the imagination leading you on and not letting you get stuck and going on and using it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of stuff that's not explained.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's fascinating, like, if you draw the structure of LSD or Jim will draw these drugs, they're these little simple structures, and you'll look at them and think the power in that structure.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at that structure and thinking, there's an archetype in that structure.
Mm-hmm.
And it does manifest concretely in people who turn that into matter and then...
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to rush through the next one. There's another dream which we'll look at. It's on 245. Let's take that up next time. Dream two.
So we're gonna.
So we'll finish. Yeah, we'll finish dream two. So read. Sorry, I thought I told you to read this. I guess I hadn't. Read to 252. I'm going to skip a lot of what he says, so don't get too bogged down in his interpretation. I think he gets too far out there. I'm going to try to simplify it considerably. And then we'll go back and we'll pick up... we'll pick up 177 and...
177?
Yeah. Is that right? Yeah, 177. Yeah. 177. And probably read through to 187.